Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council weekly podcast brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for joining us this week. On this week's program, we'll hear from Christy Apple, crop consultant with Crop Scout Christy in Michigan. We'll also hear from co-founders of the Illinois Hemp Growers Association, CEO Rachel Berry, and husband Chris Berry, the COO. A lot to talk about today on the program, so let's get started with Christy Apple in Michigan. How's your day going, Christy?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Jason, for having me today.
So, Christy, our very first question for you is going to be, what is Crop Scout Christy?
So Crop Scout Christy is not just my social media handle, but it's also become the nature of my business. So I work with individual farms and agricultural suppliers all throughout the Midwest, predominantly in Michigan, which is where I'm based out of. Mm-hmm. But I do have relationships in other states surrounding the Great Lakes. We've had a really interesting movement of cropping practices and needs for agronomy. And last year, with so many different states adding a research program for industrial hemp to their, whether it be their Department of Agriculture or in Indiana, they were working through Purdue. However that program looked for these individual states, we found a huge gap, a gaping hole, in fact, of just no agronomy support, very few resources, very limited exposure to the cannabis plant production in general, mm-hmm. and really a general lack of engagement with the farmers in the agronomy world. Mm-hmm. The most classically trained agronomists are used to taking care of a specific crop or cropping systems, or their background might be corn and soybeans production, which is where I got my start. But my personal interest in specialty crops, things like hops, vineyards, orchards, fruit and vegetable production, really gave me an opportunity to be exposed into the cannabis marketplace through greenhouse operations in Michigan under the medical marijuana production programs. Mm-hmm. So I was able to bring some of those key learnings and introduce them into farmers that were taking a stab at hemp production for 2019. And so that's kind of when my Crop Scout Christy business sort of exploded into these multi-states, traveling all over last summer, helping hemp farmers in all these different geographies, different growing conditions, trying to help them have the best possible economic outcome as it relates to their agronomy and production. So that's more or less my company in a nutshell.
So you're one of the folks that has definitely benefited from the 2018 Farm Bill and hemp in general.
I absolutely have in more ways than one. First of all, I've been able to build relationships with farmers that I normally wouldn't be in front of. Mm-hmm. That's a huge benefit to me. I'm a very farm-focused agronomist. I want my farmers to succeed. And so when I have an opportunity to influence in that way, it's been a significant blessing to me to give that, but also to help teach farmers what they're looking at and how to do this the right way without going broke while they're doing it.
Well, as somebody that has dealt with cannabis and hemp farmers, are there more hemp farmers right now in Michigan or more cannabis farmers, or how does or is that even something that we could tell right now?
I think that's really muddy water right at the moment. We just opened up Michigan as a recreational marijuana state. And so I think that that's kind of changing the landscape of production a little bit. Mm-hmm. Industrial hemp uses at the moment has a very immature supply chain. And I think that that's a huge deterrent still for both the cannabinoid production world as well as the grain and fiber production world. Farmers are just scared to throw money at a project that they may not be able to return their investment for 1 to 2 or maybe even 3 years down the road. Sure. As the supply chain continues to develop. So for a farmer that has the skill set with which to produce medical marijuana or recreational, there may be some different marketing opportunities there for them if they're going to take that approach. Mm-hmm. However, that's a very specific kind of production system with very specific quality measures and crop safety, you know, measures that need to be employed. And so I don't see field scaling of medical marijuana being very prudent at this point to be able to limit the flow of, you know, birds flying over the field or the neighbor's potential pesticides, you know, drifting onto that material. I'm just not sure that we're really geared for wide scale outdoor production unless we can really control those other factors. I see there an opportunity there for the recreational medical to grow in an indoor capacity, while at the same time our industrial hemp can slowly build acreage and become, you know, part of that bigger cropping picture for a traditional row crop farmer, adding it to his rotation.
Let's talk about the weather, Christy. We've had some folks on the last couple of weeks from different parts of the Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Kentucky. Today or this week, we're talking with you in Michigan. We're also talking with Rachel Berry in Illinois. Let's talk about the weather. Right now in Indiana this week, we've had a couple days up into the 70s, dipping back into the 50s. Right now, you guys are in the 50s up there, but more importantly, how does the rain look? How does the drought situation, flooding situation, what's going on up there in central Michigan? And is it looking good right now for hemp farmers coming into this season?
Yeah, so this year is a whole new ball game. I'll take a look at where were we in 2019. We were dealing with, first of all, late decision making due to our states dragging their feet and putting together a program at the very last second. Farmers mm-hmm. had very little time to react at the end of April when they should have been preparing to plant. They were applying for licensing to plant. So decisions all the way across the board for the 2019 growing season were really compacted and didn't give a lot of thought or give enough time to be able to do this the right way. So a lot of mistakes were made, I think, that we'll be able to completely eliminate for 2020 production. So that as it relates to weather and soil conditions, I mean, we're already here in Michigan had a terribly wet fall. We're coming out of a very weird wet winter. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a ton of snowfall. We didn't have a ton of frost in the ground, but we did get several rain events and ice events through the winter, mm-hmm. which has left us with relatively saturated soils preceding a saturated fall. So I expect the soil conditions to need to dry out significantly before we can really get cranking on putting things outdoors into the fields. However, we were also behind in 19 on growing degree days, which is really important for cannabis maturing. These plants are maturing a combination of heat and light. And so when we were behind growing degree days and we're behind on light, not just in the amount of hours we get, but also there's a big difference between a nice sunny day and a dreary day. Or a cloud cover day. And so last year we experienced a lot of cloud cover days and a lot of drearier days that weren't accumulating enough heat and light to give us a maximum, you know, opportunity to grow big, luscious, beautiful, high quality, high CBD plants. Mm-hmm. I feel like this year we're already shifting to a slightly different pattern. And a lot of that, I'm not a meteorologist by any stretch of the mean, but a lot of that has to do with the patterns of El Nino and La Nina that come out of the Pacific Ocean for us. And I think this year that we can expect, some heat units to accumulate like a little bit better than what they have in years past. And hopefully that'll also translate into light. If I'm farming this year, I think if soil conditions continue to dry out like they are and stay on track, I feel like we should be able to plant hemp in parts of Michigan as soon as, probably the end of April or first part of May, maybe a month from now or potentially less. If we plant earlier, we may have to worry about some frost, late frost potential. But I think that if we can get the crop in the ground and give ourselves a full season of vegetative growth, that we'll have, you know, much better outcome in terms of yield and quality of CBD that these plants are truly capable of.
Well, fingers crossed, of course. So, and tell us, Christy, you might not have any of the stats in front of you, what have you, but are more farmers growing CBD or grain and fiber? Or I guess I should say, were more people growing CBD last year? Will that change this year?
So a majority of Michigan producers, I'll just speak for Michigan because I'm very familiar with those statistics,
sure,
were cannabinoid production. So that was CBD. We didn't have any CBG genetics, very limited. At that point, that conversation wasn't really taking place until after harvest of the 2019 crop. But I think that, or I feel that our 2019 crop had mixed results because of a lot of factors. We have a lot of biomass out there still sitting in sheds that hasn't been sold yet because it's extremely low CBD quality. And in some cases, it's just it doesn't have the potential that we need for it to be viable in a concentratable, marketable material.
Sure.
So I think we're still going to struggle to sell that material, but I don't want to deter people or don't want that to deter farmers from going after CBD again. This market has a tremendous potential for growth. But it's going to take some time to completely capitalize that. But I do see this year more and more interest in the grain and fiber cultivars being placed in different farms. But this is going to present an entirely new challenge for cannabinoid producers. We're going to be looking at potentially within miles or within the same section, farmers that are going to have a fully pollinated grain and fiber field, just 100 feet from a cannabinoid field that we're trying to prevent pollination in.
Is that even possible to prevent that?
No, it's not. It's absolutely impossible to prevent that. We can't prevent the wind from blowing. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to require some really important due diligence on the parts of the farmer. If a farmer is going to be growing and has heard that maybe his neighbors will be growing, it might be very prudent to have a conversation about the nature of cultivars and see if you can form some type of gentleman's agreement about what you'll be doing so that you don't potentially damage or harm the other's crop. I had a little bit of that take place in one of the geographies that I consulted for last year for medical marijuana producers that were growing outdoors in an enclosed growing area. And they were very concerned about the potential of, poorly managed hemp fields potentially pollinating their highly managed marijuana farm. Mm-hmm. And although we didn't have any of that, it gave me an opportunity to say, why don't you guys touch base and talk to each other and build a relationship here so that everybody's on the same page? And I think that went over really well. So I see the window for outdoor cannabinoid production to maybe be narrowing for us in the longer term. Because grain and fiber, I think, will eclipse the acreage of cannabinoids very rapidly. The faster that supply chain develops, you're going to see more and more and more and more of that. That supply chain is still really underdeveloped, so I don't think it makes a lot of sense for people to go hog wild and plant hundreds of acres of grain and fiber cultivation. They have to have somewhere to put it, and right now those places don't really exist. So I don't see a huge shift in acreage this year because the supply chain for grain and fiber is still very underdeveloped. So until that part fixes itself or creates the market down the road, I don't see a big deviation from CBD production.
And Christy, when farmers hear this, that there's potentially nowhere to sell their crop, that they're going to spend an entire season growing, and yet they still grow it. What's going on there? Why are they still doing that? To somebody who's not a farmer, seems like you'd say, well, no market, I'm not going to put the risk out there on my own. Are they trying? Are these folks more interested in building the market, or obviously they're not as concerned about the financial reward?
I completely agree with you, Jason. It does seem counterintuitive on every single level, but I think that there is a general hope and an interest in developing a new commodity. Very few other commodities that have the potential for multi-use the way that the hemp plant has. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is an inherent hope that this will continue to develop. And as we speak, there seems to be another lab coming online for cannabinoid processing. There appears to be, these huge manufacturing companies talking about, we want to shift a percentage of our polymer needs into a hemp-based polymer by such and such date. In order to get those companies to those goals, the research and development and the maturity of the supply chain is going to have to get there. Mm-hmm. And although it feels like there's nowhere to go with this, those cogs are moving, albeit slow. Mm-hmm. Those cogs are moving. And so that I think that there is an interest in people looking to dabble or to play around with hemp, I guess you could say, mm-hmm. in maybe smaller capacities, which might help to minimize their risk and limit some of that cash outlay. But, we're also coming up with tools for managing those risks like insurances and different things, getting our crop feeding and nutritional programs tuned in so that these farmers can at least manage their input costs more effectively. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an inherent hope that is keeping these farmers engaged in this hemp industry at large?
Well, the American farmer, the resiliency of the American farmer has certainly been what has made this country the great country that it is. We can't discount that at all. So we certainly do appreciate the farmers and the risk they go through every single year, even on their regular row crops and what have you. So let's talk about the cash flow, the outlay considerations these farmers have. Is that scaring them off for the 2020 growing season, do you think? Or the ones that maybe were scared off, are other farmers coming in to fill that void?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So I think, yes, it has scared off. That cash outlay has scared off some people that just don't have the risk palette to do this. They don't have the risk palette in their financial portfolio to absorb two seasons of potentially no income on that particular part of their pie, of their financial pie. I think that that's a huge consideration for some farmers that may be scaling back or exiting the business until it does mature deeper. I've also seen an interesting shift in brand new farmers coming to the table that aren't sitting on biomass from 2019. They're looking at this completely different. So a farmer that's sitting on poor quality biomass harvested in 2019 is looking at this with a very different lens than somebody that's looking at this as a new adventure for 2020.
Sure.
And it's not just the optimism. It's a completely different approach. So last year was a lot of shotgunning, right? Let's just throw it all against the wall and hope something sticks. Mm-hmm. And that's not very prudent financial planning. I mean, that goes against small business minded individuals altogether.
Sure.
And so I think this year, a lot more analysis, a lot more rigor in cultivar selection, a lot more transparency in the COAs, the whole conversation of a certificate of analysis and proof of heritage on the genetics is a thing we're talking about. Last year, that conversation didn't even happen until we were just about ready to harvest the crop. Mm-hmm. So instead of before the farmer was making seed selections. So I think that this year, a farmer in 2020 starting out has a completely different set of standards that's already elevated above the decision tree that we had available to us for 2019. So the guys that are getting out are like, look, this was a disaster for me last year. I don't want to risk any more money. I'm out, or I'm downscaling. But the guys that are starting out this year are like, you know, it's not that farming is so great, we have millions to throw around at this, but we're interested in seeing if this is going to be a long-term fit for us. And now we have some standard operating procedures, or at least standard questions, to really drill somebody who's trying to sell me one of my inputs or all of my inputs for this crop. There's a lot more knowns than we had a year ago. So I think there's a different set of questions and a different decision tree that's kind of driving both the guy that's getting out as well as the guy that's getting in this year.
All right. Well, Christy, we certainly do appreciate this perspective from Michigan. It's always interesting to see what's going on around Indiana. Everybody's in the same boat, but everybody has just some different obstacles they're facing depending on where they are geographically. But one of the main things we need to look at here that every farmer needs is that education. And Michigan is certainly right there in the forefront of educating its farmers. You've got the Agro Expo coming up. Now, this is coming up in August, assuming the world gets back to normal, August 11th and 12th in St. John's, Michigan. I assume there's plenty of registration still available for that, but tell us a little bit about that, when they do need to register, what's their deadline. Give us some details on that.
Yeah, so the Agro Expo is a premier outdoor agricultural education event. It's a two-day event. It's located on the research farm of Agriculture Liquid Fertilizers in St. John's, Michigan. It's a beautiful country setting. It's an absolutely free event. And this year, their crop focus, they pick an overarching crop focus to generate a lot of the educational sessions surrounding that. So this year will be topics oriented to cover cropping, soil restoration, and intercropping. So the educational speakers that'll be going on all throughout both days will kind of have that focus. The equipment, there's a huge equipment exposition area, And then all kinds of different cropping experiments that you'll be able to view there as well. So this is really an interesting event. They host somewhere between 2,500 to 4,000 people annually for this event. Mm-hmm. It's a very large event. It's completely free. Pre-registration is not necessary. And this year, I'm very excited to share that we are adding a hemp education session. So we will actually have a dedicated area on the research farm where we'll be planting grain and fiber cultivars as well as cannabinoid cultivars for the purposes of demonstration and education for this event. So people will be able to see how these plants look physically different. How do we plant them different? What are some of those agronomic features that distinguish one from the other? We'll also have a vendor area for hemp-specific vendors that'll be showcasing equipment that will help to improve or to facilitate a proper hemp production setup, depending on what route you choose to go. We'll also have some genetics folks there. Our hope is that we'll have somebody represented there with the hempcrete. We're currently assembling our vendors for that at the moment. And so we're going to have a really robust program talking tech talks, 2 to 3 tech talks each day that'll be focused around some specific aspect or obstacle and production challenges that we'll bring an expert to kind of talk about that and how do we overcome those things and how do we do better with the hemp production. So this was something that was on the wish list last year, but we really didn't have enough time to plan by the time the state of Michigan made hemp an opportunity for us here. Mm-hmm. with our growing arrangement for research. But this year we are full steam ahead and I'm chairing the hemp education area and we are just rocking and rolling with this year. So.
Well, that sounds great. Now, and again, Christy, where do folks go to get more information?
Yeah, so agroexpo.com, agroexpo.com has absolutely everything you'll need to know about the expo, including bios on the speakers and showcasing the committed vendors and exhibitors for that. So that it would be the best place to stay up to date. You can follow them on social media. They have a Facebook page as well as an Instagram page under that same handle, AgroExpo. And you should be able to get all the information that you need there. We intend to continue to promote this event as we have our vendors secured and promoting. We're going to be teaching and what topics we'll be teaching on as we get closer to the event. And yes, as you mentioned earlier, fingers crossed, we will be back to normal life by then. So, but we're proceeding as all, you know, firing on all engines at this time, full steam ahead.
Well, that's all we can do right now.
Again, that's right.
There we go. Again, speaking with Christy Apple. Christy is a crop consultant, and you can get more information about Christy from, Christy, go ahead and tell us where they can get more information from Crop Scout Christy.
Sure. So I document my journeys in agriculture, all things ag, on my social media platforms, being Crop Scout Christy on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat. So if any of you are Instas or Tweeters or Facebookers or whatever, you can find me and follow me along those lines of my journey. You can reach out to me on those platforms as well if you ever have any questions about your own production system, and hopefully we'll see you out in the field.
Fantastic. Once again, Christy, really appreciate you being on the program and giving us that perspective from our friends to the north there in Michigan. And we certainly will have you back on the program here soon to get some updates.
Again, thank you, Jason, for having me. And thanks to the Midwest Hemp Council for putting out such an awesome tool of sharing all things hemp.
All right. You have a fantastic day, Christy.
Great. Thank you.
All right. As we continue on, we're speaking with Rachel Berry, CEO of the Illinois Hemp Growers Association. Rachel, how you doing today?
Doing really well. Thanks for asking.
And I should mention, Rachel is also in cahoots with her husband, Chris Berry, who we've also had on the program before. And we're going to talk to Chris in a little bit as well. So kind of a double whammy with the Berry family. How about that?
That sounds great. Thanks.
Well, Rachel, let's go over some of the basics here again for some of the folks that may not have heard the first podcast we had you on. Talk a little bit about your experience in the hemp industry and what brought you into the hemp industry.
Well, I'm a first generation farmer. I'm a regenerative farmer. I got into hemp, wanted to grow a crop that I could feel good about, that could contribute to, you know, my community and my environment. And my husband and I started the Illinois Hemp Growers Association in 2018, and mm-hmm. we've just been out there ever since, sharing what we know, putting on educational presentations, yeah, just sharing everything we know about hemp and, you know, try to save some farmers and some growers and interested parties some time. Excuse me.
Sure. And now regarding the Illinois Hemp Growers Association, tell us about your membership. How many people maybe you had last year, how much it's grown this year, and some details about that.
Yeah, we're getting new members every day. We've got free membership, which we're up to a little over 500 memberships. And then we have dues-paying members. Being a dues-paying member has a couple benefits, namely that you get invited to our members-only meeting. We have four of those a year. We're coming up on our second one, May 14th, and we've got 80 members now and more every day. So this has the potential to be a pretty good virtual meeting.
And what do you do with it? Now, again, this is probably your first virtual meeting, but typically what type of things do you cover in your meetings?
Yeah, industry updates, what's going on nationally, what's going on globally, what's going on mostly in our community. We discuss how we can be of assistance to, our members that show up and what our next move should be to get together.
And you said your next one is May 14th, and I'm sure people can get more information on your website for that. But when was the first one this year?
That was back in February.
So back in February, before the coronavirus thing popped up, what was the mindset of those that were involved with that meeting? What was the general topic? What was the mood of the farmers? Again, taking this whole corona thing out of it, because that wasn't involved at the time. What were they looking forward to, and what was the frame of mind of those farmers?
Well, of course, there are still farmers who were and still are interested in growing CBD this year, but we actually had quite a bit of discussion about fiber. So that was really exciting to, have that discussion and see others engage in it and know that, there are farmers and people interested in being processors here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. Who are, they're having those thoughts and the gears are moving.
So what do you think the topics of interest will be here for the May 14th virtual meeting?
Well, I hope to see more discussion about fiber and, some about grain, too. But I suspect that we'll be talking about, CBD, just like we were last year, and maybe other cannabinoids as well.
Now, Rachel, on your website, something that caught my attention, you've got a post on there. It goes into detail, but basically it's talking about, get your license, grab a bag of seed, and it's time to learn how to grow hemp and make use of it. So it doesn't sound like you're talking to the farmers out there with 100 acres. Sounds like you're talking to folks with a much smaller, smaller interest. So are you trying to get some folks in on the ground floor there with that, or am I misreading that?
Yeah, well, we're interested in, helping anybody who wants to experiment with this plant. Last year there was a lot of interest in growing CBD. And a lot of people, got their experience growing the cannabis through CBD. But, as we know, there's grain and fiber and dual crop varieties that people need experience growing also. Mm-hmm. And this is a crop, when you grow it this way, like we're going to demonstrate this year, you can use this on your own farm. Especially if you're a smaller farm, we're going to put this in with our vegetables. So we're going to have hemp grain to eat, and we're going to have hemp fiber to process and use ourselves here on our farm. So yeah, you're right. This isn't just something that is for big farms and useful for big farmers, but it's totally useful for smaller farmers and even, farmers who are a little more entrepreneurial and maybe they want to make an end product with, cottage food or some artisanal product with hemp fiber or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there's smaller ways to go as well.
Well, let's switch gears here. Also on your website, you have a post there talking about a regulatory bailout for hemp. What's that all about?
Yeah, I think that's a great port to switch it over to Chris, as he knows quite a bit about that.
Well, let's switch on over to Chris Berry then. Chris is also the co-founder of the Illinois Hemp Growers Association. And Chris, since I did not know I was getting you back on the program, what other title can we give you?
Hey, Jason, you can give me the title millwright. I've been working as a union millwright for the last 11 years out of Local 1693 in Chicago, Illinois. So, I'm a machinery specialist.
So how does a machinery specialist get involved in the hemp industry?
Well, when my wife became interested in hemp, it was more from an environmental perspective. And we both strongly agree that it's beneficial for the environment to grow as much hemp as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But when we started talking to a business advisor, she informed us that the major bottleneck in the industry was processing.
Okay.
So that got the gears turning in my brain. And I decided that it was worth my time to figure this thing out, to bring reasonable processing solutions to people and to use my expertise to develop them and to consult on them. That's what brought me into it. And so far, it's turned out pretty good. I mean, I've worked with a couple of different groups that are interested in developing specific machinery to handle these processes. And I'm going to be building my own here on the farm on a small scale. And we're bringing in enough seed to do like 5 acres. And we're gonna work on that scale and break it all down.
Well, it certainly sounds more logical to start on a smaller level and work your way up, as opposed to starting out with too many acres that you can't handle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's what kind of takes out some of the bigger companies. I mean, Sunstrand, you know, they put so much time into developing this complex supply chain and operating on a massive scale. And they ended up going under, running out of capital because of the scale that they're operating on and the lack of specification and distribution that we need to progress the industry.
Well, and Chris, one thing I do want to just completely out of left field. I know that you were based out of Chicago, and you and Rachel have moved to your farm. Do you like country life better than city life, or what are some of the advantages being out there? Because I know there's a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of people that, you know, basically, for lack of a better term, just went from the city to the country, and they all seem a little happier.
Yeah, you can never go back. That's my official statement on that. You can't go back.
There was never a time where you just decided, I just want to, you know, kick back and go watch Bulls games and forget about farming.
No, not since we've been out here, at least not yet. I know we know some old farmers who are like, we're going to quit. We're about ready to quit. But no, we're still very much in love with it.
That's
and,
great.
You just can't go back. The freedom and the amount of like experimentation that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you can have so many experiments going. We live on 13 acres and it's like all we can handle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it can be as involved as you want it to be. And that's what's beautiful about it. Farming is like the ultimate job. It's like the job of all jobs.
And it's a never ending job.
Yeah.
Well, now Rachel passed the phone over to you to talk about this, the regulatory bailout for hemp in Illinois. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that's all about?
Yeah. So I just made a blog post on Tuesday that I published. And I just kind of did a rundown of the legislation in Illinois that's kind of active right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole regulatory bailout is the idea that the FDA needs to loosen up. Like, the hemp industry doesn't need a monetary bailout. We need a regulatory bailout.
Ah.
So the FDA needs to drop this whole blockage of interstate commerce and allow the CBD as a supplement, allow CBD as a food additive. The IRS needs to allow the CBD to be purchased with funds from health savings accounts. The Safe Banking Act needs to pass through Congress to increase access to banking. And CBD companies need to be eligible for SBA loans and other disaster funds as well.
Do you think this is just ignorance of lawmakers, or are there obstacles in the way that have to be explained?
The FDA would have you believe that there's major obstacles in the way. Previous Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, he suggested it could take up to 5 years to develop guidelines for CBD because of its complexity.
Okay.
Which is an unrealistic timetable because people are already producing it. It's on shelves everywhere. And it's, you know, once Gottlieb was out, Dr. Stephen Hahn came in, and he's been quoted as saying it's a fool's game to try to even approach taking these products off the shelves. So that's kind of what's this big obstacle is. It's not lack of understanding or ignorance. Mm-hmm. It's overcautiousness. It's attempting to protect people as much as possible,
sure.
Potentially, you know, to an unnecessary degree.
And what do you think can be done to move that along? Obviously, 5 years is too long. What do you anticipate? How long do you think it may take? And what can be done to move that along?
Well, there's a bill called H.R. 5587, which was introduced by Colin Peterson, who's a Democrat out of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. It was introduced on January 13th, and the bill has two main objectives. And the first is to create an exception in the FDA, the FDA's Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act for hemp-derived CBD. Mm-hmm. And then the second is to mandate a study, feasibility study, related to hemp. So they want to push a one-year timeline in the FDA's direction, and in the interim, they want to just have free reign to allow CBD in all forms of commerce.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's the best way to go?
My opinion is, if they're going to do that, I think right now, why not just go mm-hmm. for it? Like mm-hmm. we need that regulatory bailout, right, as soon as possible.
Oh well, but absolutely.
If they're gonna give everybody carte blanche to just start moving product everywhere, you got to have concrete guidance coming from the USDA and the FDA to make sure that everybody's buying the right stuff and knows what to look for, so that you don't have this massive proliferation of snake oil and mislabeled products out there.
Well, sure. The focus should be on policing those that are involved in the industry, not iron fisted, but police it to where you're just checking, making sure everybody is doing as they say they're doing, and just have some harsh penalties for those who don't.
Yeah, and Illinois kind of took initiative on that, actually. They've got their own little bill that's designed to go after CBD products and regulate it at the state level.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that will be effective?
Right now, it's so generalized. It's not, the language is not specific enough. Mm-hmm. And but the threat of imprisonment is very real in it.
Well, imprisonment is always very real. There's yeah, no question about that. Now, the to switch gears here a little bit, the Illinois Harvest Report for 2019 was released. Can you give us some insight into that and tell us what that's about?
Yeah, so the Illinois Department of Ag told us in December that the report would be out in February, but obviously it took a little longer for them to get it out. Mm-hmm. It came out April 8th, and what it shows is that Illinois harvested about 2.2 million pounds of hemp. Most of it was in biomass mm-hmm. for extraction, mm-hmm. almost 1.5 million pounds of it, which to me, I want to compare it to Wisconsin's harvest. And Wisconsin's harvest was around 3.3 or 3.4 million pounds.
Okay.
So Wisconsin produced about 50% more than Illinois. So that kind of gives you a little bit of perspective, I guess, on it. And between the two states, we produced almost 6 million pounds of hemp.
Now, of that 6 million pounds of hemp, how much of that was sold and how much of that is still sitting in barns? Do we have any idea?
That is the question. In Wisconsin, they asked the farmers how much of it they were able to sell, and they indicated that it was less than 10%.
Wow.
So I would imagine that it's similar in Illinois, potentially maybe a little better. Mm-hmm. But I would say, yeah, 9 out of 10 people probably still have everything they harvested.
Well, it stands to reason that there probably will be more farmers growing this year. That's going to increase the amount of available hemp out there. So are we getting any closer to getting more than 10% of that sold?
Yeah, I mean, in Illinois, they opened it up so that licensed cannabis cultivators for adult and medical use cannabis mm-hmm. are able to purchase hemp for extraction purposes to put into infused products.
Okay.
So licensed cannabis cultivators in Illinois can buy directly from hemp growers, licensed hemp growers and licensed hemp processors. They can buy hemp biomass for extraction, and they have to extract it and put it into infused product, or they can just buy extracted hemp from processors like crude, distillate, isolate, stuff like that.
Well, actually
in the bill, they said in the rules, they said they cannot buy crude. It has to be distillate or isolate.
Well, that's a great way to bridge the hemp and the cannabis industry together to help them both grow.
Yeah, it's like a very promising arena, but as far as like its timing, it's kind of like a little too little too late.
Oh, okay.
Because the prices for CBD extract right now are so low that what this opportunity creates, because it's only going to be allowed until October 31st of this year. After that, we don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So until that time, what it does is it allows cannabis cultivators to take advantage of an extremely depressed market. So they can stock up on all the CBD oil they'll ever need for 5 years, 10 years at super low prices.
Sure.
And then that sets them up for a decade of success, buying low and selling high.
So, Chris, right now, Rachel said you've got about 80 folks involved in the organization there, the Illinois Hemp Growers Association. What do you tell these? I mean, they're asking, you know, why would I get involved in this when I may only be able to sell 10% of my crop, if anything? Prices are low. Why would I get involved in this right now in Illinois?
Well, if you look at averages never tell the story. So it's more about your style of growing, your style of cultivation, and how you build your own market.
Mm-hmm.
It's about connecting with your community and working on a local level to move hemp products on a small scale. And those that did that last year for their own farms ended up being reasonably successful. Everybody who had a plan for marketing went to market, and they made some money off their hemp.
So there's certainly some farmers that have been successful with hemp.
Yeah, I think the big holdup is a lot of people are just looking to cash in and get a check, but mm-hmm. that's just not how it works right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what we recommend to the farmers that we do have as members, we tell them that if this is going to be your first grow, do the state minimum size of a quarter acre outdoors, which is going to be plenty for you to handle.
Sure.
And if you do well on a quarter acre, you'll harvest a lot of product that you need to work to sell. And if you do that, then you can turn a profit on your hemp. You're not going to start a billion-dollar vertical integrated company, but you're gonna make it worth your while. You're growing a crop. It's not a magic key to millionaire status. Like you're growing. It's like growing any other crop.
Again, we're working with about 80 members, but I know that's increasing on a regular basis for you guys. But are those mostly all row crop farmers? Do you have folks working with greenhouses? How does that kind of break down?
Yeah, it breaks down all over the place. We have genetic supplier, like seed vendors. We have greenhouse growers. We have row crop farmers. We have intensive CBD farmers. We have just normal interested consumers, people who don't even grow hemp, join and pay dues because they support what we do.
That's fantastic. Wide variety of folks involved.
Yeah, we don't discriminate when it comes to, if you want to support us, please support us. Come to our meetings, meet us face to face. Like we're here and we're ready to help anybody do anything and save time. Like don't waste your time dreaming about stuff that's not possible. Talk to us, talk to someone who's been here for a while, and we can help you. We can put you on the right track.
Well, we always say education is the key to the hemp industry. Chris, can you tell us where folks can get more information about the Illinois Hemp Growers Association and other things you guys are involved in there?
Sure. Our website is illinoishga.com. That's our website. And we have our email and our phone number on the website. You can call us, contact us anytime. I post a weekly blog on that website. I send out newsletters. If you want to subscribe to our website, you'll get our newsletter and you'll keep up with us every week. And I would appreciate it if people found us and did so and give us some more feedback. Let us know what you think about what we're doing. We kind of exist in this space where we've put enough time into it to where we're separating out from your average level of expertise on hemp. We're sort of like getting to this point where we're in uncharted territory. We're going to do an experimental fiber grow and manage a crop the way we think it should be managed. But maybe there's someone out there that can help us, save us some time. So if you're that person and you're hearing this, give me a call.
Well, you know, that's one reason we like to branch out with the Midwest Hemp Council podcast and not only talk Indiana, where we're based, but also the other states, Kentucky, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, the states around here, because, of course, if you're in the hemp industry at all, you're curious. You want more information. There's just really not enough information out there. People are always searching. So regardless of what state they're in, you know, they like going to the other other states and seeing what they're doing and that sort of thing. So maybe you can get some input for some other folks there, and we can keep this thing going. Chris, is there anything else? We do appreciate Rachel being on with us. We appreciate you being on with us. Was there anything else that we needed to hit on timely purposes here in the hemp industry in Illinois?
No, I don't think so. We got the harvest report. We covered the adult use, medical. We went over some legislation. I think we're good. I think, you know, legislative sessions are suspended right now, so there's just not a whole lot of movement. And we've noticed that there's a little less traffic on the website mm-hmm. and all that stuff. It just seems like it's just a slump for everything right now.
Well, let's hope in the next couple of weeks everything starts picking back up.
Yeah, well, the weather's going to pick up no matter what.
Sure.
So we ordered seed today. So we're getting hemp seed. Hopefully by they said April 21st, we're actually getting it out of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
So they said the port was closed and they were planning on getting it this week or next week. Now it's been bumped back. So our planting date was supposed to be April 17th, 15th, 16th, 17th.
Okay.
And now it's going to have to be last week of April, maybe first week of May.
Do you think that's going to hurt you?
No, we'll be all right.
It's, okay.
I mean, you know, as a farmer who's done all this research, it's like, oh, we got to get it in by this date to get the best possible results. But you can get good results all the way to the middle of June.
Ah, fantastic, fantastic. Once again, Chris Berry. Also, we heard from Rachel Berry, his wife, and both of them are co-founders of the Illinois Hemp Growers Association. Go check them out and get some more information there. Chris, we appreciate it, and please pass our appreciation on to Rachel as well.
Sure. Jason says, thank you, Rachel.
Fantastic. And everybody's at home. That's just what makes this one, you know, kind of just a strange period, but kind of a unique, kind of cool period. Everybody gets to be home and be together. Some people that's good. Some people that's not good. But, you know, there you go. Chris, once again, thanks so much. And we will look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure.
And that's going to do it for our show this week. Thanks for listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts on the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.